Welcome to ASME TechCast, where we bring you the innovators, innovations, and issues that push the envelope of engineering. My name is John Kozowatz, Senior Editor of Mechanical Engineering Magazine at ASME.org. And today we're speaking with Doug Gutenberg. He is COO of DMI Companies, a mid-sized manufacturer of heating, ventilating, and air conditioning products and components in Charleroi, Pennsylvania, just a bit south of Pittsburgh. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So manufacturing firms of all sizes are in transition, moving to automation and digital operations. The plans of larger global firms are prominent as automakers, aircraft manufacturers, and others rearrange design plans and factory floors to automate, digitally link workers, and integrate data analytics to build efficiencies. But smaller firms are also finding their way to what's called Industry 4.0, and DMI is one of them. So, Doug, let's talk about DMI's path on this. How does a smaller firm digitally transform itself? Let's start by describing your operation and when did it become apparent that you needed to upgrade?
Yeah, so give you a little history to start off. DMI Companies was founded in 1978 here in Pittsburgh. We have four factories across the country and employ approximately 425 people. We roll form, we stamp, we fabricate commercial and industrial HVAC ducting and ducting components. We manufacture 6 days a week, with five of those days facilitating a 2 10-hour shifts per day. We are a lean and sustainable company, continually looking to improve on its manufacturing processes, its products, its services, and workforce capabilities. You know, we've been practicing lean manufacturing for many years and have been able to fine-tune most of our processes. However, have only been able to take it so far. You know, as a result of our lean practices, we were able to tighten up and sync most of our production scheduling to a point where we were running pretty much JIT while managing our workforce and manufacturing line capacities. We had adjusted our scheduling so tight across the factories. As you get into lean methodologies and you're successful, I like to say you turn the screws, and you turn the screws so tight like a clock that when something breaks or you have a cog, obviously you feel the ripple effect. But one of the things that we had it so tight across the factories that we couldn't afford unexpected downtime. And as our business grew, we needed more capacity. However, we still had issues to solve the traditional lean tools and approaches could not accomplish. Different people running the same lines had different outcomes, different production managers interpreting needs and scheduling differently, production and cost data segregated, which made it difficult and time-consuming to gather and consolidate into anything meaningful, finding quality or production issues days or weeks after the fact, difficulty in predicting machine breakdowns. And we also had a few long-term safety concerns with regard to repetitive heavy lifting jobs. In 2015, 2016, our CEO and myself were invited to be members of the U.S. Manufacturing Council under the Obama administration. The focus as a whole was to bring back manufacturing to the U.S. As a result of serving on the council, our takeaways were it was clear that the future of manufacturing in the U.S., especially for small, medium-sized companies, demanded a move towards automation, especially to compete with low-wage and subsidized countries if you want to survive. In addition, it was estimated by 2025 there would be close to 2 to 3 million unfilled manufacturing jobs due to baby boomer retirement and the continued notion you needed a college degree to be successful. And we believe there will continue to be a shortage of workers well over the next decade, and more than likely facilitating the need to eliminate redundant, ergonomically challenged, and task-oriented jobs. All things that can be addressed and solved with Industry 4.0 concepts and initiatives. And you know, let's face it, there are a few kids today growing up helping dad work on the car, building tree houses, or souping up bicycles. I mean, we're all playing video games and playing on our phones. So, you know, a lot of the out-of-box thinking as it relates to manufacturing and conceptually looking at ways to get things accomplished, they just don't exist on the plant floor. We realized that we needed to transform our business to continue to grow, reach new markets, and be competitive by leveraging digital technologies that would make our operations more agile, flexible, and responsive. You know, DMI Industry 4.0 is not just the latest buzzword. It has become part of our culture, as well as a core focus of our corporate strategy. Our Industry 4.0 journey is promoting an environment where everyone and everything learns as a unified team.
So how did you assess the cost of entry when you began? And what were the obstacles that you identified at the time?
Yeah, so we have good things and we have bad things. You know, the good thing is that, you know, our business at the time went through a rapid growth period, which required a top-down rebuild and replacement of our existing network and system infrastructure at all sites. This was one of the most significant obstacles that we had to overcome, as this took several years to complete with no real ROI until completion. You know, costs were understood as part of doing business. However, the timing couldn't have been worse. It would have been nice, you know, here we're ready to launch and get into Industry 4.0 and starting to learn about all the different technologies and things that are available to us, but we needed to get the infrastructure. And so the good news is that we needed the infrastructure, so we didn't, you know, as a cost of doing business, there was no real case. It was understood from the top down that needed done. Typically 4.0 strategies sometimes are difficult to, especially when you're getting started, to create a return on investment, or at least an acceptable one. Other obstacles include understanding the different technologies, how they would fit within the business, and developing or upskilling employees to be able to realize and utilize, you know, those technologies. Those were the main hurdles at first.
Okay. And what one of the lessons that seems to be learned in all of this is that in order for this to succeed, you've got to have buy-in from the from top level down in the company. And I'm assuming, from what you're saying, at least, that this began at the top level.
Oh, absolutely. You know, being part of many manufacturing councils and various industrial resource groups and things of that nature, you know, it has been very topical probably for the last 15 years or more. But, you know, too far to reach, too far to try and spend the time. You know, as soon as you get back to the office, your people are at your door and you're back to business as usual. So one of the things that had to happen was, you know, we were all, many people at the mid-level management were intrigued by it, but we really needed the, especially with the lack of a clear return on investment, because, you know, there are very few people who really understand, soup to nuts, what Industry 4.0 means. You know, it's a good concept, but what does it mean to the business? How do I integrate into the business? So you have to get the top-down approach. And we were very fortunate to have a forward-thinking board of directors and ownership and our CEO.
Okay. So to implement it, you've formed efficiency teams to prioritize investments. So who makes up the team and how does it interact with leadership and how much autonomy is given?
Yeah, our efficiency teams, they really do a great job. And the teams are made up of a production manager who does the majority of the production scheduling and manpower use, a mechanical engineer for machine process improvement integrity, along with an industrial engineer to execute Lean and Six Sigma practices for overall process improvement. You know, they report directly to the factory superintendent. The objective is to shift total production management and continuous improvement to the floor level. And they facilitate a conduit for continual improvement. You know, one of the issues that we have is in a traditional management structure, you have a lot going on, and a couple of our manufacturing plants are over 200,000 square feet. So you've got a lot of going on, you've got a lot of people, and it's very difficult to manage all that's going on and do it in real time. In other words, there's always an issue or there's always something going on and you need to adjust. So what we did is we sliced up, and we have strategic business units, and we sliced up various parts of the plant and allowed the teams to focus on those individual areas, which made it much more manageable. Another thing that I would say that most people are familiar with is that in plants those size, you have an issue or you have an initiative, and everybody goes to that side and they work on that, and you may have a fire down the other end and then everybody goes over there. Well, work stops here and nobody picks it up. This is a way to continually keep those initiatives and the cost containment and efficiencies in place. The teams monitor and manage all of the production in an effort to achieve maximum throughput and machine utilization at all times, which includes quality scheduling, inventory, preventive maintenance, and consistent changeovers, and primarily to establish predictability and consistency in the management of production and production processes. And as a natural extension of their management, they look for low-level automation to reduce worker steps, for example, increase throughput, et cetera. That could mean something as small as a conveyor to move parts to the next area or raw material to the point of manufacture. They have a fair amount of autonomy in how they manage production as a team. The teams, as well as the factory superintendents and other respective managers, all look at the same data in the same way. That's very important. So they are consistently interacting on various issues and initiatives, which keeps the entire management staff in sync and generally moving in the same direction. They continually work on identifying and qualifying larger projects as well, and then submit proposals to the management team for further approval. And depending on the size of the project, it may make its way all the way up to the board of directors. But we as an organization, we look at efficiency and better ways of doing things from the top down, and we may come up with projects, high-level projects, and we'll work them. But that continual pipeline generally comes from the efficiency teams.
Okay. Before we go any further, let's just set the stage here for a moment and describe the production lines, the specific production lines that you were dealing with and their operation.
So we have, as I mentioned earlier, we roll form and we stamp. We also fabricate. So we run, we have very sophisticated Trump lasers and roll forming lines, various lines that have up to 23 and 25 stations. We have four or five 150 ton presses that we manufacture parts. So we've got a lot of activity. We've got day shift, we've got night shift. And we have to continually feed the lines and remove the finished goods from the lines. But you can imagine with that, all the various components, that there's a lot of things going on within a production line. So we have a lot of assembly lines as well. But primarily, the actual fabrication or manufacturing takes place with roll forming, stamping, laser, those types of things.
And you said that now your folks are able to look at data on the floor in the same way.
Yep.
Analytics and systems integration are certainly key to this.
Oh, absolutely.
So how did you approach that from the beginning, and how much learning for the staff was involved?
Well, it's interesting because when you really start to look into it, when we started this journey, what you find is, at least what we had found was that we had several versions of the truth floating around, be it spreadsheets, access databases, and other various reports. And that combined with the rapid growth of integrated systems, we were faced with the same challenges as other growing companies, too much data, not enough data that's not understood or data that is out of date. So that was certainly an eye opener. When you really start to dig into the lower levels and what everybody's trying to utilize as a tool. And so from that, our executive team realized that the method and how we collect and disseminate data was critical to growth and was equally essential in establishing harmonized operations. Basically everybody working from the same version of the truth. Our approach was simple. We first needed to understand the needs of the organization, what was relevant and critical versus what was nice to have or one-offs. And we needed to pull sales and purchasing, operations, and logistics as everybody essentially is connected. This led to the implementation of a data warehouse, leveraging a tabular server that selects, organizes, and aggregates data from multiple systems that's refreshed every 20 minutes without human intervention. Power BI is a tool we use to create dashboards and visualizations that assists with the day-to-day data-driven decisions. We also created an IT OT essentially information technologies meet operation technologies, where we have integrated our IT department within our operations group, forming a team that leverages software and application expertise and support within production management for analytics and data. When you think about a typical company and you have an IT department, you know, a lot of those like accounting and IT, you know, they become siloed departments. Meanwhile, you're trying to implement software and create views and gather data and utilize the Internet of Things. And that's where IT really plays a major role. So the formation of an IT-OT department, if you will, or program, was very critical to our success. And we're having great success with it. You know, we recently filled the position of IT-OT programs manager, and that person works directly with the operations group.
Well, did you work with a consultant on implementation of all this?
No. Now, we have in certain aspects some of the robotic arms and the programming, and certainly some of the data we're collecting from the machines. As we built our in-house expertise, we did use some third-party people to help us. I will say that a lot of our success is really due to our CIO. He is, really phenomenal. He takes this stuff very seriously. He's well-educated in terms of the ins and outs of Industry 4.0. And he, you know, in conjunction with other third parties to help us with the software, has really taken this by the horns and helped to move it forward. So we're very fortunate to have him.
And how far along are you now in the conversion?
Well, you know, I'd say we have a long way to go with our digital journey. Technology continues to advance at a faster pace, and we're currently working on a digital twinning project with local academia, and we have began integrating aspects of a connected plant floor. Our long-term strategy is to streamline and optimize the fragmented legacy of processes into, you know, an integrated environment that is responsive to change and supportive in the delivery of the business strategy. We've made significant progress in our digital transformation journey with software solutions such as MES and EAM, ION, VPI, CPQ, Data Warehouse. So, you know, many, many acronyms, but all critical and all integrated. However, we have also made investments in hardware, IoT, PLCs, machines, et cetera, as well as the network infrastructure to enable our digital twinning connected plant floor initiative. So you continue to build on your initiative, and we're anticipating completion of these projects in 2022 and then turn to implementation of a warehouse management system that we are hopeful will provide end-to-end supply chain visibility.
And are you connected now, working similarly with your suppliers and with your clients along the supply chain?
Yeah, well, probably more with our clients as we are with our providers or our folks and suppliers. And I think we work real hard to make the customer experience to be as good. And in our industry, I think we're fairly well ahead of the curve there. However, with our suppliers, it's a little different story. We are currently still at a traditional, we do supplier scorecards and we do different things of that. But, you know, being able to communicate with suppliers based on the data that we have as far as the seasonality of products, the right locations to have the products, we sell more out of this location, that location. I mean, we have that information, but it would take somebody full time to really work on that. And that's what we hope to get through warehouse management system. And what we will do when we go to implement that is work with several of our suppliers for best practices and to help us with that.
All right. One item that we found interesting in your approach was the commitment to attract more women into manufacturing. So how does digitalization impact this?
Well, you know, it's just fun. It's funny because when you look at manufacturing, and of course, a lot of people around this area think of the mills and what they remember reading and their grandfathers telling them about mills. It's the notion is the stereotype of manufacturing is dirty and dangerous, low paying job. And that's the furthest from the truth in the 21st century. It's a hotbed of ideation and innovation and exciting challenges. that pays at a minimum family-sustaining wages. As technology expands and matures, there are many career opportunities in manufacturing for all. You know, as our systems grow in complexity, care and feeding of the systems and supporting process becomes paramount in maintaining harmonized operations. And I used harmonized because, again, everybody's connected and integrated. And as we continue to digitize our organization, we can attract and empower women to challenge our organization with more out-of-the-box thinking. And, you know, we work really hard to try and attract women. We've got them on the floor. But I think what's happened is the industry overall is becoming exciting. And of course, in Pittsburgh itself, there's a lot of automation and a lot of it's everywhere with CMU and ARM and all the organizations that are around. So I think women are seeing that there is a career. They're depending on where they want to go. We haven't had a lot of trouble attracting them, because when they come in, they see that no, this is 21st century. It's not dingy, dirty, dark. People aren't always getting hurt. And there's a lot of collaboration on when you're working on initiatives like this. And I think they're very exciting.
How do you approach worker buy-in on this? Mm-hmm. One of the common refrains in this is that workers are threatened by automation. Yeah. And you're working with a union shop.
Yeah.
How do you approach that?
Well, it's funny because absolutely, you know, initially some of our folks are threatened by the idea of automation. And you know, we went through the same process when we were implementing lean. You know, I'll lose my job, et cetera. How we do that is we address that is we utilize two approaches. You know, first, we explain the different forms of automation. Automation isn't just a robotic arm or a collaborative robot, but it encompasses, you know, various other forms as well. And you start to explain some of that stuff to them and they start to see how it could help them, the individual. But even with that, you know, they're still a little concerned that they may lose their job and what have you. So the second practice that we use is basically standard lean. You know, we engage the employee or employees doing the job and have them be a part of the team to identify opportunities for automation. We as a management team may say we're going to do automation, but then when we actually go to implement it, we listen to them and fully make them a part of the process. I can't stress that enough. Even if their ideas are not realistic, you need to take the time to explain the shortcomings. But then take certain aspects of their idea and turn them into maybe other ideas or other initiatives, or give them a little bit of homework to do. I think that has really helped with that. We've also, over the years, last couple of years, we've established workforce development programs, working with area high schools and trade schools. And our automation engineering manager was an intern with us in high school and then throughout college. We hired him 2 years ago and he's leading that charge. And we just recently hired a second intern as an automation engineer after she graduated. We've also started a mechatronics apprenticeship program about 4 years ago. That's available to our employees for career advancement. And if you consider the current shortage of workers, not only qualified, but all workers, we will do as much home growing as we can. And I will tell you to date, we have not let any employee go as a result of our implementation of Industry 4.0 or lean manufacturing for that matter, not at all.
And how do you assess success throughout as the program develops and continues?
Well, I think that, we look at what we're doing. Of course, we look at our costs. We look at markets that we can get into. We look at, we're not the low, we're the Cadillac. We're not the GM. And, you know, we have a big company to run here and we've got lots of things going on. So we need to maintain certain profit margins. And we've been able to get into markets and compete. So certainly look at that, but more on the plant floor, we're a lot more agile, we're more nimble, we're running much more efficiently, creating additional capacity. You know, one example would be used to take two shifts to run one of our departments, and it now takes one. Same amount of people, but we've just increased capacity twofold. you know, we see it in our labor variance, our downtime, and we've been doing more with less. And of course, the pandemic's forced down a lot on us, but luckily we were in the throes of this implementation. So that has really helped out. You know, we're extremely excited where we are and where we're going, and we certainly can't wait to see what tomorrow brings.
Well, we're going to have to leave it here for now, Doug. I want to thank you again for speaking with us today.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Yeah.
And thank you to everyone for listening. And if you'd like to listen to other ASME TechCasts on a range of engineering issues, please look to your favorite podcast channel. And again, my name is John Kozolotz.